So, I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on one of Alienware's biggest gaming sales of the year? I mean, these are holiday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware, with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it before the holidays. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories like the Alienware 32 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These really are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So, I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before it's too late.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
When that bass kicks in, that can only mean one thing. It's time for DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace. Squarespace! They made that possible, bringing the show to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also, games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, with two N's and one T, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who is not nominated, won't be allowed to attend, and has absolutely zero chance, but is still kind of hoping he wins an Emmy tonight, Christian Spicer.
Actually, I am attending, Jeff, but thanks.
Are you really?
No, I'm not, but that was a sick burn. That was great.
Was it? Or was it just a bold-faced lie that didn't really work out well for anybody?
Happy to be here.
Oh, man. This week, of course, as always, DLC stands for your downloadable Cannata, your downloadable Christian. But this week, DLC stands for Dad and LA Comedian, because you've seen him on Key & Peele, Children's Hospital, Reno 911, Terriers, and more. He served as the artistic director for the LAUCB Theater and performs regularly there with a Sentimental Lady and Convoy. And he's also a huge science nerd. We are so happy to welcome Alex Berg to the show. Welcome, Alex.
Hey, guys, what's going on? We're going to get it going today. We're going to really burn it up.
People don't realize Alex Berg is actually Christian Spicer's character that he's invented for the show.
If I could keep that up for the entirety of the podcast, I would. Or live cast, whatever you call these things.
We call it a cavalcade of happiness. It's DLC. And we need to start the way we do every episode with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
See, not too far away from a morning zoo.
Yeah, it's not that far. It's in the same neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
The same cul-de-sac.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we try to decide on what the most important stories were this week, and we decide who's right about that. You can submit stories for our consideration all week long by using the hashtag DLCSOTW on Twitter. That's DLC Story of the Week. Or by using our subreddit. We have a subreddit over at reddit.com/5x5DLC, or excuse me, /r/5x5DLC. And before we get into the stories, the most submitted stories this week were kind of depressing. And it's another week where we've hit another low point in the gaming community, and it makes me embarrassed to be associated with the hobby. And I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this topic because I don't even want to validate it or perpetuate any of this garbage in any way. But I do want to say this. If you are supporting harassment and personal attacks on anyone in the name of protecting video games, you need to take a long, hard look in the mirror and see who's really doing the most damage. And if you've ever used the words whore or slut online to describe a woman at any time, then you are no friend of this show. And if you're actually one of these a-holes who is carrying out hacks or creating fake accounts to spam abuse to anybody at all, at any time, ever, or if you're trying to justify any of these things in any way, then you are the worst kind of sleazebag. You're breaking the number one rule of life on this planet, which is don't be a dick. Shape up and stop being a jerk. Okay, that's what I wanted to say about that. A lot of people wanted us to talk about it, and I'm much more interested in talking about happier things. I'm not trying to whitewash the news. There's, you know, denial of service attacks happening. There's planes being rerouted. It's a bunch of garbage as far as I'm concerned. People are behaving like criminals and petulant children. But there is no legitimate other side to this argument, so we're not going to waste our time talking about it. There's no justification for any of this kind of activity, so discussing reasons is a waste of time. There's only room on the show to condemn it and move on, so that's what we're doing. We do this show because we love video games, and we've got a lot to love this week. We've got an awesome guest, so that's what we're going to say about that, and we're going to move on to awesome stuff. Also, I should note, you're going to want to stick around to the end of the show this week because we're doing a little new bit called Parting Gift, where we're going to give a little fun recommendation at the end of the show. So be sure to stick around all the way at the end. Okay. Enough with the crap, enough with the negativity, enough with that stuff. We're going to talk about cool stories because there's a lot of them to talk about this week. And Alex, you have the first pick of Story of the Week. So what did you want to talk about?
So my goal is to try to find the most important video game story this week. That's the marching orders. And there's two here that strike me as like, oh, this is important, not just in that it's like cool news this week, but it might seriously affect like the future of gaming and that sort of stuff. So I'm going to lob up two, and I'll let you guys debate which one we go after first. So the two that I think are like the most important is Microsoft's cloud gaming solution by hiding latency, and then the Netflix VR interface. So which of those really tickles your pickle?
Well, I think we should talk about both of them because my pickle is very ticklish this week. And let's start with that Microsoft cloud gaming solution, which they're calling DeLorean. I guess because there's time travel involved? I don't know. It's predicting the future. So basically, this idea is that latency is a big problem in multiplayer gaming, in any kind of cloud-based gaming where you're trying to get...
Latency is a big problem in any cloud-based gaming when we're trying to get...
I don't get what you're doing.
It's a latency joke.
Oh, the latency.
You just got burned by the Spice Man and the sick latency burns.
So anyway, so yeah, you know, if you've got anybody who's tried to play online games and had a high ping knows that it's an issue. So Microsoft has got this new system that is trying to deal with that by predicting what you're going to do based on tons of data of all the people that have already been through the area that you're trying to get through in the game. And it's making a matrix of potential moves and selecting the one that it thinks you're going to do before you do it. Now, this is kind of how all multiplayer games work. They are anticipating
if you're walking in a straight line, they think you're going to continue walking in that straight line. And that's why you'll see sometimes on really low latency or, excuse me, high latency games, you'll see, you know, a character teleport in space, pop into another location. It's because what they actually did is different from what the computer thought they were going to do. But I guess Microsoft is making a much bigger push because cloud gaming is such a big part of their strategy. Are you guys comfortable with a computer? I'll ask you, Alex, are you comfortable with a computer predicting what you're going to do in a game?
I mean, so long as it's better than like the Netflix prediction algorithm for what movies I want to watch, like, you know, I mean,
thinks I want to watch another episode of House Hunters International. I don't understand why this game thinks that.
Yeah, I mean, if it starts doing the sort of thing where it's like, oh, you fell in that pit, you must love falling in pits, then, you know, no, I don't want that so much. But I think that this is, you know, more so than the immediate applications to cloud gaming and stuff, which I think is huge and will only get better as, like, you know, bandwidth increases and Comcast gets off their duff and gives me some, you know, uplink speed and stuff. Like, but I think this is also just a huge, just technical thing that will have like far ranging applications. And I love it when something comes about because of video games and then like just bleeds out to the rest of everything, you know?
Yeah. What about you, Christian? What's your take on this?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, in the article that I saw over on GameSpot was talking about how, you know, for games, they'll actually have multiple predictions sometimes. So it requires really large bandwidth that isn't ready for consumer use yet, but it is something they're testing. So it's not just, you know, Berg's going to jump in this pit, but it's like he'll jump in this pit, you know, shoot this other person or climb this rope, and it will have all three kind of predictions out. And then which one you do, they can hopefully jump to faster and keep latency down. And then to give a plug to your We Have Concerns co-host, if you haven't watched Anthony Carboni's video, he has on his YouTube channel about your brain latency. I mean, this notion of predicting what you're going to do per Anthony's video, I haven't done any real research myself, but I mean, that's how your brain works anyway. You know, your brain, from when you see things to when you catch them, like you catch a ball, it's your brain predicting when that ball's going to be there. You can't see it and process it fast enough. So it's just, you know, the virtual extension of that technology, I guess, that built-in technology. And done right, if it works, I mean, that sounds great. I think the creepy flip side of it is, or how you could argue against it is, well, oh, no, great, now I'm not even playing the game. It's just, it's on autopilot. I saw some backlash about that when this story was kind of going around Twitter. But that's silly. That's not what's happening. I mean, if you don't push a button, the game isn't going to be like, well, let's put him on this rope.
Right.
It's just trying
to... Seems like a rope guy. We're going to do him a favor and just get him swinging ahead of time. He probably went to go grab a sandwich or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as in the chat room, we have ETH Demon and others talking about how that predictive net code has been around for a while, which is kind of what I was saying. Literally every online game has been doing this since the beginning of online games to a certain extent. I think the idea here is that Microsoft's taking it further and using it in all cloud-based games so that even in single-player experiences, there's going to be, or their plan is that there will be some of this in play. And it really is to help people that have slower connections and to create smoother experiences. If the experience is smooth and you can't really tell the difference either way, then, you know, obviously this is a success. But you can
tell the difference, though, because as you're playing it, as you're using DeLorean tech, you have a picture of your family off to the side.
Yeah, and if you do something wrong, they start fading out and, you know, Chuck Berry gets involved. It's very intense.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody wants that. Listen, nobody wants that.
I mean, the real problem is that, you know, if you're using this DeLorean technology and you get really far in the game, they put you in like a pink fringed cowboy suit. You know, it's just, it gets Andy McDowell shows up your house or Mary Steenburgen shows up, you know, it's problematic.
And all the kids have no idea what we're talking about.
That's more like, that old man sounds crazy. I'm 32.
Let's talk about the other story that you brought up as well. This really cool experimental Oculus interface that Netflix showed off. Evidently, Netflix does something that a lot of companies are doing these days, where they're mandating or suggesting that their employees spend a certain amount of work hours working on projects that are just have nothing to do with anything, just kind of passion projects. And a few engineers decided that they would take their hack day and create this Oculus interface for Netflix, which basically equates to, if you've seen the video, which I highly recommend checking out, it's pretty cool. It's as if you're in the Matrix. You're walking down a hallway. You can reach out. It also uses what it looks like a version of the Leap motion sensor, which is a motion control sensor. And you can reach out and touch the movie you want or TV show you want. You're in this giant 3D space that looks like the room in the Matrix where the architect lives. It has all kinds of screens everywhere. You're digging this, huh, Alex?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and part of what I like about this, and part of what changed me from noted Facebook skeptic to like, I don't know, these guys have a lot of money, maybe they're good for Oculus, is just this idea that Facebook really wants to treat VR as like a whole computing platform, not just like an end to fun gaming sort of stuff. And I think that Netflix is something that so many people have familiarity with, that if Netflix can debut like a pretty intuitive, I mean, the video makes it feel very intuitive, VR interface, I think that will start to open people's minds, you know, just like get people thinking a little bit more about how you can use the VR space for more practical applications other than gaming. I got nothing against gaming. But if VR is going to be a really big thing, we need to be able to figure out, like, how do you surf a web page in VR without just having it be a screen in front of your face?
You know? Literally surf it.
Yeah, actually surf it. They give you a Leap motion surfboard and you have to, like, pivot your ankles the right way.
Yeah.
Watch out for sharks. And
yeah.
But yeah, I don't think it's, I don't look at the Netflix interface and go, like, oh my God, we could have never imagined this in a sci-fi movie, but I do think it's a really important first step.
Yeah. I should mention this was submitted by @RalphArmondGeek on Twitter using that hashtag DLCSOSTW. And it was also alongside another VR submission, this time in our subreddit by 63, that got me so jazzed. And I think both these stories hand in hand are another example of how excited I am for where we're going in VR. We're baby steps. We're like right on the verge of being so awesome. And that is the new version of the Half-Life 2 VR mod. Did you guys watch this video?
I have not. I'll pull it up right now.
Yeah, it's so awesome. Somebody took Half-Life 2 and modded it to support both the Oculus and motion sensors, more like the Sony Move or Wii or something you actually hold in your hand. And the guy's like throwing grenades by, actually throwing his hand and using the iconic Half-Life 2 crowbar to actually hack through boxes and stuff by moving his arm. I mean, again, we are in the Castle Wolfenstein to 3D gaming step right now. This is just the beginning, but in 10 years, I really think this is the future. This is happening. It's going to be usable. It's going to be viable, and it's going to create some insanely awesome experiences. And I'm so excited about it.
So you think that all Kinect was missing was a VR headset, or is it just the higher fidelity that looks? I mean, I still don't think that this is main. Maybe it is. Maybe it's that sad mainstream, I need to figure out a better way to phrase that. But like, you walk into your house and then you put on your VR headset and then you flail around in front of your TV for a little bit. And I also think it's funny that, a lot of these companies, like, their hack days, it's like, hey guys, we want you to do something that's not work related. And one guy's like, spend time with my family? No. You still have to be at work. You just need to do something not work related. Well, I'll create a VR headset where I can spend time with my family.
The saddest employee. It's her birthday today. I told her I'd be there for cake and tea.
No, but you can create. I like that VR headset idea, as long as it's still for not spending time with your family.
That explains how I can log on to Netflix and go to the birthday card show. That's just a series of one guy's birthday cards to his
just
daughter.
Just employees saying hi to their children over and over again.
Well, that section is in video games, right? It's the Half-Life 2 babies or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like Counter-Strike babies.
Yeah.
It's like,
have in the credits. They're like, here are all the children that were born during production who will be fatherless because their dads are programmers.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think this tech is cool. That video is cool. I think it requires say, a larger or different game space than what most people have today to be, you know, throwing grenades and moving around.
Well, if you watch the video, he's just sitting in front of his computer. He's not doing anything special.
Well, I know, but I mean, I think a mainstream version of this is a little different than that video. I think it needs to be a little more elegant in how you put it on and how you play it, blah, 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 all that stuff. But I also think it's just a, I don't know, it's, I'm old. I'm 33, so I got 1 year on your Berg. Watch out.
Oh, geezer.
Maybe it's my nostalgia speaking of, like, you know, Halo 1 LAN parties were great. And yeah, Halo 3 is fun to play online. You know, you can just jump in and play whatever. But it's like moving further and further and further away from couch co-op, that dorm experience or whatever. And then the next step is you're just strapped in into your helmet and pretending to move around. Like, I don't know if that's the future I want. I mean, don't get me wrong, I will buy it, but I don't know. I don't know if it's that exciting.
I'll tell you why I'm excited for it, because I think that, like, this is what the Power Glove promised me when I was like 6 years old and failed to deliver on. You know, like, remember when the Power Glove came out and everyone was like, oh, we could just play punch out by punching. And it was like the most disappointing piece of garbage, like, accessory ever. And then, like, when Wii came out and you did Wii boxing, it was like, oh my God, I'm punching. And there was like something like very, I mean, ultimately, in all honesty, the novelty of the Wii wore off pretty quickly. So maybe this is the same thing. But what I like about this is, like, my favorite way to play video games is in my apartment with all the lights off, the sound way up, and the TV in my face. So I feel like completely immersed, you know, like I am that sad gamer. You know? So, like, right. For me to be at least be able to be like a cutting edge sad gamer, I'm looking for, like, I need technological help with depression and loneliness. And I think that the Oculus can give it to me.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I mean, I agree with all of those points, but I'm on the other side of it. I guess I do like that immersion. Roman MF in the chat says, you know, people didn't want to put on 3D glasses at home. You'll think they'll want to throw on a big ass headset. And I don't know. I kind of agree with that. I think it's just you come home.
It's different.
Okay. Because you want one and you didn't want the other.
No, it's because I talk about this all the time. It's leaning back experiences and leaning forward experiences, and watching a movie is a leaning back experience. You don't want to put something on your face because you're relaxing, you're unwinding, you're watching a movie. Playing a video game is not that. I mean, sometimes it's that, but these kinds of experiences aren't going to be that. They're going to be a sitting forward, you are invested in the world kind of experience. And maybe some will be more casual, and maybe the Netflix example is a way this won't really be applicable, but I like that people are experimenting that way. And I really do feel like it's not just about putting something on your face. It's about being transported into another world. And anybody who's already tried the Oculus can tell you that that experience is demonstrably different than anything you've ever experienced in a video game before. And I think that's going to be, it's going to be a major shift.
And I actually do agree with Roman MF of, like, no one wants, like, a big, you know, even if it's a pound, no one wants that hanging on their face, you know, while they're playing video games. But also, like, you know, I look at the first laptops, which weighed, like, you know, 20, 25 period, you know, pounds or something like that. And it's like, no one thought that would take off. They just had to figure out how to make them smaller. Same thing with cell phones, you know? So I think in, like, 5 or 10 years, like, the actual hardware of the Oculus will be so unobtrusive. Yeah, that won't be as much of an issue.
I agree. All right, Christian, what is your story of the week?
I mean, it's breaking and it's hot, and
it is.
So it might be changed by the time you listen to this. It comes out RSS if you're not hanging out live with us, but do hang out live with us. We have a little giveaway we'll do at the end of the show just for people hanging out in the chat. So this might be old news to you if you're listening to this come Wednesday, but Amazon might buy Twitch incoming.
Wait, what? I thought the Googles were buying Twitch.
Well, it was going to be called Google Hangout Pro. Now it's going to be called Rapid Fire or something. There's going to be fire in the name somewhere. But that's the breaking news. It was on Ars Technica had it, Business Insider had it. All these stories started popping up this morning. And, you know, it looked like there were rumors that the Google deal was a done deal, and it wasn't reported or confirmed by either company. And now you know, maybe they went a little further down into the valley, in old Silicon Valley, and found a new purchaser. Maybe TJ Miller or Kumail were over there. That's a Silicon Valley HBO joke.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
Thank you. Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it. I do them for you.
Thank you, sir.
So it's not confirmed. The price isn't confirmed, but this isn't, you know, I think file this under news. It's interesting.
Yeah, we don't know much about it, but it would certainly be a major, major coup if Amazon managed to swoop in and steal Twitch from Google. I think we can all agree that Twitch is where gaming is right now and is where it's headed. It's really the only thing that anybody knows is a sure bet and it has upward growth potential. To have that be in the hands of Amazon is a really interesting concept, because Amazon seems to be making a significant play for the gaming space. And the idea of what? Amazon type sales within Twitch potentially, or maybe they just run this as its own autonomous thing. It's interesting.
It could be some integration of, you know, their Prime instant service. You know, I don't think people, if like Netflix were buying it, they'd be like, oh, they're expanding their streaming to game streaming or whatever. And I think Amazon, it is mostly thought of as, you know, a place where you go and buy stuff, but with their streaming, and don't forget, while they haven't really done much with it, they did buy, was it Double Helix? They have some game devs over there, and there were rumors of all these other high profile people leaving other developers to go work over there. And now if they have Twitch, I mean, I think they have something in the kitchen, whether or not we'll ever see it. You know, it might be like a Valve situation where, you know, Valve works on all this stuff, all these rumors come out, and then you never see any of it per se. But I wouldn't be surprised.
How stoked is Twitch to be the darling in a bidding war between the two of the wealthiest companies on the planet?
And they're the belle of the ball right now. I mean, they've got to be over the moon with how good their service is doing, you know, because I look at Twitch and like, I don't watch much Twitch. Like, I have a Twitch show I do once in a while, but like, it is just, it, you know, Kristen, you were talking about like that couch co-op kind of feel earlier. Like, Twitch is like that, you know, it feels like playing video games with your friends on the couch next to you, you know, like in kind of a fun way. And I think that like, if Amazon buys it, there'd be two things I would suspect to happen. One, I would guess that they would try to pull like the more successful, like, Twitch celebrities into their original programming department and try to like make some kind of like video game talk show or something like that around them. Just from having pitched to them and knowing how that works. And then the other thing that's possible is Amazon just buys companies. Like, a couple of years ago, they bought a robotics company that makes these little, they look like droids, like small flat droids for warehouses and stuff like that.
And now they have drones. Now they have a fleet of drones.
Yeah, basically, you know. So I also wouldn't be surprised if they're like, look, we're just going to buy Twitch because we know that someone's going to buy it and there is money to be made off of it. Whether or not that means they're going to be super hands-on with it or really incorporate it directly into like Amazon stuff, I don't know.
It's interesting that if Google does not get it, I think that might be even the bigger story than Amazon getting it, because that would mean maybe no YouTube integration anymore. What, you know, I think the idea that Twitch and YouTube were going to have a handshake agreement because they were both owned by the same mega corporation could have been potentially cool for users. And maybe this is less likely, although certainly wouldn't hurt Amazon to use YouTube. So you don't know. There's a lot of question marks still.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm going to pick a story of the week, although that breaking one is pretty huge. And I love those VR stories as well. But I'm going to pick a story of the week that was submitted by at Lincoln Sean, just because in a week of such garbage, I was really happy to see this feel-good story. Evidently, there's this dad in Vancouver whose 8-year-old son was excited to log on to his Minecraft server when he got home and build some cool roller coasters. And when he did, there was this griefer who logged on and destroyed all his stuff. He stomped through his sandbox and, you know, kicked down his sandcastle. And that caused tears from the 8-year-old, and it made the dad sad. And he talked to some other fathers of young kids in his peer group, and they were all having the same kind of situation where their kids were getting harassed by griefers. And he went, you know what? I can fix this. So he built a box that he's calling the Mind Block, and it is a tiny Minecraft server that can support up to 8 people on it. It's a closed system. And it uses the Raspberry Pi mini computer that you can get and kind of use in a whole variety of ways. And it's cool. It creates this safe environment for his kid and their friends to get on and not be messed with by a-holes, which is sort of a theme this week that I'm in support of. And I dig what this dad did, and I think it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can't... I just, you know, I understand that some people enjoy trolling, and that's, like, what they live for and stuff like that. But for me... the fun of trolling is when you know the person so you can see their reaction, you know, like at least you know that they know that you destroyed their stuff and you get to go like, yeah, I'm a jerk. Let's go get a beer, you know, or whatever it is. It's so foreign to me to just be like, I don't know, I'm bored. I'm going to go destroy something someone else clearly spent hours building to not even see the payoff of their reaction. Just to know that exists in the ether is like really weird to me.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But it's cool that this guy, you know, he didn't just take that. He used his ingenuity and these really cool tools that are available now, like Raspberry Pi and Arduino, to be able to fix the situation. And I just kind of want to applaud that and appreciate at Lincoln Sean for bringing it to my attention, because it's a cool story.
Yeah, I've only dabbled with Minecraft on iOS version, which I know is far from the complete or best version. But I mean, was this kid on a public server? I was under the impression, and I think someone just said this in the chat. Could you not have a private server? Was this kid in a public server and just didn't know it maybe when he set it up? I thought that was one of the things you could do on Minecraft before, was just, I think my little brother was just playing with a friend in San Francisco and it was just their server. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I think if anybody finds out the address, they can join it. But I could be wrong about that, because clearly we are olds and don't know enough about the Minecrafts to talk about it. So, perhaps we should just move on.
No, well, I mean, I think the larger point here, though, is like what you were saying, Alex, about the troll, the unsatisfied, satisfied troll. Like, I mean, I think we've all been jerks in our life at some point, and you do something, you know, you grief your friend because you give them a hard time, and then you get to see their face or, you know, whatever, and you're like, oh, you know, whatever pranked you. But yeah, like the modern troll who like lives under their bridge and comes out and just like, the modern troll is like a bird flying thousands of feet above the air and just pooping on people's cars and just like getting satisfaction knowing that they ruined someone's day. But
yeah,
not
even getting to see the poop on. I mean, for me, if I'm that bird, I'm going to poop on someone's car that I know, and I know they just washed it, and I know they know it's my poop, and I'm going to go like, ain't I a stinker? You know, like I'm not into just the random spray.
We all want to see the poop. Everybody wants to see their own poop. It's a universal, wait, what am I talking about? I forgot what I was talking about.
We're talking about poop. But I mean, and then I think the other side of the story is that we're seeing more and more that I think is interesting. It's like the unwritten part of the story is that gamers now are parents themselves, and they're finding cool ways to make gaming fun and interesting and relevant and safe for their children. You see examples like this dad creating Mind Block. There are examples of parents like, you know, hacking or gender swapping Mario games, you know, so their daughter is playing as Princess Saving Mario and things like that. And I think that's what's really cool is that, you know, gaming is this real mainstream thing now where parents are playing with their kids and interacting and making it this really fun thing. So kudos to this, you know, dad for helping out his kid and basically also kudo to the rest of the family, because this kid, I'm sure, was crying and no one wants to be around.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. Like, as a father, like, if someone made my daughter that upset and they weren't, like, around so I could wring their neck, I don't even know what I would do. You know, I would just be like, so, I would be so insane. Like, there's no recourse, because I don't know how to program. I can barely work a toaster oven, you know? So, kudos
You're
to
like,
this
I'll
guy
make you,
for
I'll
doing
make you
something.
A bagel, honey. I'll toast you a bagel.
yeah. Come on, dad's going to get high and play Diablo while he figures out what to do about this.
On that note, we should thank our sponsor. We are so grateful to have Squarespace sponsoring DLC. Squarespace is the perfect place to go if you have any need for any kind of online presence. If you want to create a blog or an online portfolio, a website of any kind, even an online store, it's the easiest place to make a site that looks awesome. Squarespace has beautiful designs. They have these awesome templates, but the best thing about it is that you can mess with them and make them your own in really elegant, easy ways. It's all drag and drop. What you see is what you get. You just click on something, just move it around, grab a picture, drop it in. It's the coolest thing. I use it. My own personal website, jeffcanada.com, is on Squarespace and has been for years. It is easy. You can't bring those sites down. They're secure. They have 99.99% uptime. They're inexpensive, which is really cool. They got plans that start at only $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And if you want to create an online store, every site comes with the ability to do commerce. It's really cool. And you can start a free trial, which isn't free like other websites where they say free, but they're going to automatically charge your credit card after a month. Squarespace doesn't even take your credit card. They're so confident that you're going to dig their site. They let you build your website for free using all their tools, make it how you want it to be. And if you like it, then you give them your credit card. And if you do that, I think you would be smart to use our promo code because we'll give you 10% off. How cool is that? If you go to squarespace.com/DLC and use the promo code Jeff sent me, Squarespace is going to give you 10% off your first purchase. Plus, you'll show support for DLC, the fact that you listen, the fact that they are doing a good thing by supporting this show and making it possible by sponsoring. So that's squarespace.com/DLC. Use that promo code Jeff sent me. Get 10% off your first order and make one of the coolest looking sites on the web that'll be secure and awesome and easy to use. Check that out. We thank Squarespace for sponsoring the show. We got a bunch of other topics to talk about here. There's some really interesting stuff, including this article about a study from DFC Intelligence that said that according to their data, in 2013, 92% of PC game sales were digital. That to me is staggering.
That's
crazy. Only 8% of people who bought PC games bought them in a box in a store, and everybody else bought them online. I think that's the sea change. It said for the first time, digital game sales overtook physical in 2013. And that check this out, for people that think PC gaming is dead, they said PC games market has surpassed the console gaming sector in terms of revenue. So how about that, guys? PC games, viva la PC, huh?
I've always felt left out of PC gaming because I had a Mac when I was a kid, you know? So it's like everyone would be playing like Doom or Command and Conquer or like, what was the Star Wars one? Dark Forces, you know? Like,
yeah, back in the day.
Way back in the day, yeah. I'm like, I could never get in on it, you know? So I've always just been a console guy. And then I feel like in the past couple of years, I've become more aware of like, oh, the PC rigs seem to have like better graphics and they run the game faster and it's a little smoother and there's, you know, this whole thing. So like that whole market to me has always been a bit of a mystery, but to hear that 92% is online is crazy. I mean, that's crazy.
I mean, I know for myself, that's how I get all my PC games. It's Steam or downloading from some other service. So I'm certainly part of that 92%.
Yeah. I think 92% is a higher number than most would have guessed. But then if you step back and think, when was the last time you saw a boxed PC game at a store? And where was it? Like, go to Target, and it's like clearance games, kids' books. Oh, by the way, Diablo in a box, or
right,
you know,
or like
Best Buy.
More so than where that, it's normally like you go to Staples, and it's like, hey, do you like casino games? You can play roulette and whist. You know,
I like Kent Doggy Dog in the chat room says, I bet 90% of the 8% is physical copies of hunting games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, I don't know how prevalent they are, but, or they're the collector's editions.
Yeah. Yeah, that, because they give you a reason to own that box with all the extra goodie bits in there. I think that's just pretty big. Also, you know, that data point about the fact that PC games is a bigger market than console is pretty impressive as well.
But what did you dive into that research? I'm curious. I started to this morning and ran out of time. I'm just curious what that means, because it's a bigger market. So that just means more people own PCs than own consoles? Well, of course.
No. It's saying total revenue in terms of software only.
Okay, got it.
It surpassed console software revenue.
Software only revenue sales. Okay, yeah, I still want to dive. I feel like that's my problem with all of this kind of stuff. You look at it and you're like, wow, that's crazy. That's fascinating. And then it's, you know, lies, damn lies and statistics. And then you listen to a Malcolm Gladwell book and you're like, well, this is the most fascinating thing ever, because, you know, you assume he does his research and it's just like 40% of 60% of students representing 20% of kids say ice cream is, and you're like, yep,
right.
Believe
okay,
it.
So you ran into one guy at a party who liked ice cream, and now we all think that's a fact.
Yeah. And that Malcolm Gladwell doesn't know anything.
Right. Yeah,
listen to Christian Spicer. I want to talk about
ice cream.
Speaking of us being wrong, the subreddit was a buzz this week. Criticizing our coverage of Gamescom last week a little bit, and said that we gave short shrift to the Microsoft press conference. The Willy Effect is a user on Reddit who started a subreddit topic thread about our praising of the PS4 and Sony's press conference, and the fact that we only talked about the Tomb Raider scandal, that's not a scandal, controversy, and the fact that we were upset about no Kinect, and that we didn't talk about any good stuff for Xbox. So I'm going to give us, I appreciate the criticism, and I want to give, I know Christian, you were very down on Microsoft. Alex, you weren't here, but I think we can all blame Christian for this mostly.
Oh yeah, I can get down on Christian if that helps even things out. That's real easy to do.
Yeah, well, it's a weekly occurrence here.
Okay, good. So yeah, Christian, get rid of the fedora. everyone knows there's no frames in those lenses. Or okay, screw it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you got lenses with no frames. That's weirder.
I'll trade you my fictional fedora for your real life cargo shorts.
No dice.
All right, so let's just briefly talk about some of the things we overlooked perhaps last week. And one of them is the Quantum Break gameplay footage. Quantum Break, huge title from Remedy, the guys that made Alan Wake, which is one of my favorite games of last gen. And man, that footage looked real slick. Did you guys get a chance to take a look at it? Christian?
I looked at it and it reminded me a lot of this Sony game I want to talk about.
Well played, sir. Well played.
No, I mean,
this is how we get a reputation, you know. This is how these things get started.
I think it looks great and I'm super excited about it. And the Willy Effect maybe didn't listen or recalls, I was really high on Quantum Break and I still am. Our pre E3 prediction shows, I was hyping it at, this is before they said it wasn't going to be there, as my potential game of the show. I think
which makes it weirder that you didn't talk about it last week, huh? Weirder.
No. Not at all, because
even worse.
Fortunately or unfortunately, oftentimes news is things that are upsetting people, or you know, it's traffic accidents. Instead of this game continues to look cool, but this game continues to look cool. My concern with it, and I know they've said it's still part of it, but you know, the Microsoft TV studios shutting down. I hope that this game doesn't become, to some extent, similar to the way Fantasia is bogged down by being a Kinect game. I hope this game isn't hampered by the fact that it's relying on, or it seems as if an important part of it is, you know, the live action, the TV show part of it. Because I think Remedy makes amazing games, and I would hate to see Quantum Break not reach, you know, mass audience or reach its full potential because it's trying to do something cool and awesome that it seemed like Microsoft was throwing a lot of weight behind. Man, now I'm ragging on Microsoft again. This game looks great. The footage looked great. I'm super excited for it. How's that?
Well, I will say that I was a little disappointed with the fact that it's such a shooter. And yes, it looks just gorgeous, and how it integrates the almost photorealistic actors that, you know, this is going to be that show that's hand in hand, or game that's hand in hand with a show.
But so was Alan Wake, and you loved that. I mean, Alan Wake was a shooter.
Yeah, I know.
It was a flashlight shooter, but it was
I'm
a
ready,
shooter.
Yeah, but I'm ready for these. I'm ready for these kinds of games, these really cinematic story based games, to just let's just figure out a way to make fun happen that doesn't. If you're making a television show and the guy shoots 400 people in a half an hour, it's going to feel like a weird television show. So if you're making a game,
it's 24 and it's one of the best shows ever.
I don't particularly like 24, but the point I'm trying to make is that it just was a cover shooter, and that that was a little disappointing to me. I'm more excited about the storytelling of this game. The effects of the time stopping were so original. I've never seen that visualization of that kind of thing. We've seen that idea, that concept expressed in lots of fiction before, but I've never seen it done that way. And I thought that was a really cool, unique take on it. And I'm still very excited about this game in a lot of ways. I just was like, oh, it's a cover shooter. Okay. All right. Let's do
I don't know. I mean, you said Alan Wake was one of your favorite games of last gen. It's a shame. Yeah. Like, give Remedy the benefit of the doubt. They've made games loved. And this game, I mean, to call it generic looking, I think is understating how awesome it looks. You know what I mean? Like, the graphics look incredible. And I think that there is going to be interesting narrative stuff done in the game and time shifting. I think it's sometimes easy to get carried away with what we want a game to be versus, like, this game is innovating on so many levels already in terms of, you know, the interplay with the TV show. I do think the time control mechanic is going to be more interesting, more akin to how they initially revealed it versus than just a rewind button per se. And it's like at some point, I think I said this when I was talking about, I forget what game already. Maybe it was Watch Dogs. Like, they announce a game and we all get excited for a game and we all want Watch Dogs 2, or we all want Assassin's Creed 2. And unfortunately, it often takes making a Quantum Break 1 before they can make that Quantum Break 2. And we put all these expectations and hopes and dreams and kittens and rainbows in this basket, and then it's easy to be disappointed, you know.
You're such a Microsoft fanboy.
Which reminds me of a game coming out on the Vita I want to talk about. I think there's going to be a lot to like here. And I don't know. I think hold up. I think you'll like this game, Jeff. Let's prepare to be pleased.
Okay. I want to be. I do. I'm a huge fan of that studio and their games. So I am. Speaking of games, let's get to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? During the playlist, we love to hear what you guys are playing. If you're listening live, as you can every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, you can call in and share what's on your playlist, what you're excited about, what you're digging these days by calling in at 512-518-5714. That's 512-518-5714. Alex, what is on your playlist this week? I see that you're playing some Diablo.
Oh, goodness gracious. I had to force myself to go to bed last night. I got Diablo 3 when it came out for PC, but I have a Mac and it's not a great gaming rig and the controls were wonky when you're using a trackpad and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. I never really played much of it. And then, like, all the reviews for it when it came out on console said it was, like, really great and it just felt like playing Gauntlet. And so last night was sort of my first night since I downloaded it to sit down and have like a true like session, you know? And I sat down and was like, I'm just going to polish off Act 1 and then I'll go to bed. And then like 6 hours later, I'm not done with Act 1, but my character's level 21 and kicking butt and taking names. And I still feel pretty good about myself, but goodness, it's bringing back like old school addiction for me. And also it's so much fun to, I've never been good enough with a mouse and keyboard to be able to do like attack combos and that sort of stuff. And to have like five different attacks at your fingertips and be able to like do one and then hit with another and then do one, it's a whole different game for me. And I'm really enjoying it much more than I did when I played it on my laptop.
What class are you playing this time?
I got a Crusader going because I like being a meat shield, mm-hmm. you know, and it's, It's pretty fun. It's just, it's a super fun class. Like, I just stand in the middle of a horde of bosses and beat the tar out of all of them and get health back every time I hit somebody. And it's really, really great.
Yeah, it is. Are you playing on PS4, Xbox One, 360,
I'm playing PS3? It on PS4.
Yeah.
Fanboy.
Yeah, I really am.
Actually, somebody pointed us this week to an article saying that the frame rate is actually better on the Xbox One than it is on PS4, which is interesting to me. But you have to really be looking for it.
Yeah.
I've been playing it on PS4 as well, and it's fantastic. As I mentioned last week, I think where controller control really shines most is with the ranged classes, Witch Doctor or Wizard or... The Demon Hunter, because of how aiming works on the with the mouse is just awkward, and I think it works so well with a controller. And the game looks great. It's got that level of Blizzard polish that I'm so enamored with. I dig it. What else have you been playing, Alex?
I've also been playing Fez recently. Mm,
yeah,
which I came into Fez really prepared to hate it. Based on what a douche Phil Fish comes off as in the indie game documentary. You know, because I basically walked away from that documentary going like, this guy's a dick. You know, like, his game mm-hmm. looks stupid. I just want to go play Braid, you know, like all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, it was the free game for PlayStation Plus members this month, so I figured I'd download it and check it out. And within an hour, I was like, oh, this is amazing. And then after like 6 hours... I started going like, oh, there's so much more here than I thought.
And then after 8 hours, you lost your save file?
Yeah, I deleted my save file and had to go back and redo it all. wow. Which was the worst. When you beat the game, you go into like New Game Plus and it starts you over at the beginning. And if you're stoned and can't realize what's going on, you might think that you've accidentally started a new game. And then when you quit out and say, don't bother saving... that you're just erasing like the 5 minutes of new game you've just played, not like the 9+ hours of game you've been playing all week. And then when you realize your mistake, you take to Twitter to air your grievances. but what's crazy is after playing through it, like I was able to get back to where I was in like a 10-hour save game in less than 2 hours, like just because I knew all the secrets and puzzles already and was able to like power through it. And now I'm at the point in the game where I think to progress... I have to basically do cryptography and crack the language code.
Oh, man. Crazy, right?
I cracked one language in the game already, and now I have to crack a second one. So that's the next.
A lot of language cracking.
Yeah, but I really like it. Like, I like a game where the puzzles are so deep that I have to, like, take notes, and, like, I keep, like, a pad and paper next to me when I play, and I take pictures of stuff on my phone so I can, like, reference it later. You know, it's been a long time since I've played a puzzle game like that, that's been that intense and that thought out. And I really, really like it.
Yeah. The first time that I used my phone, I won't say how, but to do something in that game that I couldn't do in the game, but had to use my phone to do, I was like, this is some next level stuff here, man. This is some seriously outside the box thinking, which is why it's such a bummer that we won't. Don't seem like we're going to get more of that
puzzles
game.
Puzzles where I've like not been able to figure it out. And I've started like, okay, well, maybe I'll try turning my TV volume all the way down and see if that does something. You know, it's like, I don't know where the game really ends or what its boundaries really are.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that.
Let's check in on the phones and see what other people are playing. I got somebody on the line from the 413 area code. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Hi, I'm Nate. I'm calling from Massachusetts. I've been playing a lot of Guild Wars 2 still, and I also played Depression Quest over the weekend. I wanted to check that out.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think of it?
I thought that was it was interesting. I mean, it's not fun. It's, you know, it's more like an interactive novel, really, than a game, but it was interesting. I think it's important more than it is, like, fun.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of games like that lately, especially coming out of the indie community, where fun, you know, in the same way that when movies evolved and when, you know, novels and any kind of narrative medium, any kind of artistic medium really, evolves to a point of not just tickling the id, but trying to do something that's even a little more complicated and subtle. And I think that that's a really exciting place for video games to be getting to. You're seeing games like Gone Home. You're seeing games like Depression Quest. You're seeing games that are really more expressions of their creators than they are just diversions for an audience. And I find that to be pretty exciting. Let's check in with another caller. I've got somebody on the line from 601 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist?
Yeah, my name is Brandon. I'm from Mississippi. And to talk about another game with a deep and artistic message, I've been playing Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes. It's a joke.
Oh, I know Christian played that. So what's your take?
I just started playing it the other night, and one thing I know is we're always talking about how we hope technology will really change the way games play and not just improve the graphics. And in a very small way, I noticed I was having a problem in the game I have in the past because all the dudes I was choking out kept waking up on me. And I realized it's because the game can keep track of them all.
Interesting.
You know, in the past on the PlayStation 2, eventually, you know, you change areas and I didn't have to worry about anyone I knocked out earlier. But here, if there's someone on the other side of the island, he's eventually going to wake up and set off the alarm. I never took that into account until I started having people searching me out actively. And so, you know, it's a small way. It's not quite like, you know, advanced AI that we want, but it's nice to see technology changing the way I play a game a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. Hopefully that goes into the main game, like how that plays out is because Ground Zeroes is all one map. And it's a larger map than, you know, or one area. It's a larger area than what you saw in other Metal Gear games without a reload. So it does, like all of the, you know, if you just knock someone out, they're going to come back. They're going to wake up and they're going to go set off the alarm. Whereas, as like the caller said, in older games, you know, as long as you cleared that area before they woke up, you didn't have to worry about it. And I'm curious to see how that plays out in 5. Don't worry,
they'll just be distracted by a chick in a bikini. Don't worry about it.
That's not true. They only get distracted for a little bit, and then they set off a different type of alarm, and then the sprinklers turn on, and it's a party.
the swing alarm, I think it is.
Yeah.
I am excited about, you know, this extra processing power we've gotten these new consoles being pushed to creating more robust environments, more detailed simulations, and more interesting, far-reaching implications for your actions. I think that's really the gist of what he's talking about, is that, yeah, you know, yes, the graphics are nicer, but we've also got a larger play world that has ramifications for how I play, which is what we're hoping for.
And the fact that world is consistent and stays a certain way, even when you're not looking at it, just makes it feel more real. Like, oh, it remembers that I was here and I did these things, as opposed to, like, you know, the video game trope that we've all just accepted of, like, well, reality is erased as soon as I walk away.
No, that's real life too, though, right, Berg? Because you commit a crime, and then as long as you get across state lines, you're in a different jurisdiction. Like, movies have taught me that. It's as long as you just get across, I'm in a different city, LA police. What you gonna do now? It's, you're safe, man. That's real life.
Yeah. It's all jurisdiction.
Yeah.
And my jurisdiction is this circle that's around me.
Yeah.
Christian, what about you? What's on your playlist this week?
So I dove into, I had talked about it before, having liked it at E3, and I think the PlayStation Play games that have come out this year have been pretty fun. Hohokam is the game that is the least for me, because I usually require objectives and missions and checking things off. And so first it was Rogue Legacy, and then Swapper, and then now I dove into Counter Spy. Started on the PS4, then actually finished it on the Vita when I was on the road here last weekend. I really, really, really like this game. Counter Spy is a 2D kind of cel-shaded, slickly animated and art style, like picture Batman the Animated Series. Like when I started playing it, I tweeted like, okay, the people that made Counter Spy need to make a Batman the Animated Series game, because I would love that. And it's 2D, and then the way you interact with enemies, it's, you know, shooting, and you'll hide behind cover, and the perspective will kind of shift to an over-the-shoulder third person, so you can line up shots a little bit better. And the levels are randomly generated, so when you go into it, it'll be a little different than last time. And the premise of the game is you're a spy working for neither the U.S. nor Russia, and you're trying to avert a huge nuclear disaster by kind of sabotaging both countries. I really enjoyed this game. I've completed it. And I think if you read the reviews online, in my opinion, they're overly harsh with some of the scores. However, I agree with almost all of the criticisms brought up in the reviews. I just don't think it impacts the game as negatively as the reviewers think so. And so some of the reviews are that the game is maybe unfair in the sense that the way levels are generated, you know, it's meant to be a stealth game and you get extra XP for not being discovered. And then if you are discovered, a guard will call in and they'll raise the alarm. And if the alarm gets, it's a DEFCON level. If it reaches one, then a timer starts and you have to rush to the end of the level to stop the timer or else you fail the game or fail that level. And there are times where you'll walk into a room and a guard will be looking right at you. And you're, you know, you immediately cannot get a stealth kill on that guard. I've found that you can, however, get out your gun really quick and shoot them and kill them before they alert others 99% of the time. But that is a real quote-unquote flaw that's in the game. But I guess for me, what I find okay with that is that maybe I'm justifying bad game design. But like to some extent, I feel like I'm this spy and I took on this persona and that's real life. Like I'll open a door and sometimes, oh crap, I'm spotted. Now what do I do in this situation that I'm put in? And I think sometimes those are fun and exciting. I think where the game is maybe, air quote, confusing to people is that it does reward you for stealth kills also, but this isn't, it's not Splinter Cell. It's not, you need to be stealthily throughout because you're able to unlock and upgrade weapons. And so one of the weapons is a grenade launcher. Like there's no stealthy way to use a grenade launcher. You know what I mean? You go in a room.
If I hide behind this fern.
Yeah, no, if you're behind a fern, you launch a grenade, you better kill them all yeah. because they're going to wake up. And the other critiques about the game are that it's, you know, short. I completed my first run through on default difficulty. It took me about 2.5 hours. I've since gone back and played New Game Plus where the enemies are a little more armored and a little more protected. But I just, this game is right up my alley. It's light. It's fun. I enjoy each level. Takes about 15 minutes to get through. It's definitely better on the PS4. I have not played the PS3 version of it. The Vita version is playable, but load times, it's one load before the level starts. Load times are uncomfortably long, and there will be frame rate slowdown if you like shoot an exploding barrel. Nothing that impacted the playing of the game, but it's just a less nice version of it for sure. But I just like that I can sit down and I can play this, you know, on my PS4 or whatever, play through a level, have fun silently taking out guys when I can, or, oh crap, how do I get out of this situation? Run to the end, push the button. In my playthrough so far with completing the game and then going back on a harder difficulty, I've only failed a level once. So even if you're spotted, I don't think it's insurmountable to then pass the level. And you know, I think if you've watched the trailers and you think you like it, that looks good to you, I highly recommend it. I mean, that's what the game is.
Well,
it's more
if you're
that.
Hanging out in our chat room, we got a code we're going to give out at the end of the show. So hang around after the show, and we'll. We had the designer on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he had so much fun that he wanted to reward the audience, and he threw us a code. So we'll drop that into the chat room. So guys, be prepared. Copy that code down as fast as you can. throw it into the machine so you can be the one who wins. I have been playing a boatload of Heroes of the Storm because I love it. It has got its hooks into me so hardcore. I'm in this constant struggle of like, well, if I like this, should I be playing League of Legends or Dota? And all the people are like, yes. And I go, well, but I love this game. And so why don't I just keep playing this game? Because this game is amazing. And I feel like there is Blizzard did the thing that Blizzard does, which is it takes the thing that is got rough edges and is people love it, but it's not perfect and makes it perfect. I mean, they did it with, you know, with Hearthstone and Magic the Gathering. They did it with World of Warcraft and EverQuest. And I feel like they're doing it again here. The games, I think, are probably a little shorter than the average League or Dota game, which is really palatable and fun. I can sit down and play a game in about 15 minutes with my buddies. I love the mix of characters. I love the fact that I can select the character I want to play before I have to select, you know, what lane I'm doing or whatever. And it's it just feels more akin to what I, the experience I want to have. And I'm definitely a Blizzard fanboy and I love that universe. And I'm excited when new heroes are announced because I have context for them. I love the fact that Diablo in the game has skills that are akin to how Diablo battles when you fight Diablo in Diablo 3. He does the same things. I find that cool and geeky and awesome. I'm just getting into this like second layer of awesome heroes that are much more difficult but and more challenging, but so rewarding to play as. And I'm still digging Muradin, but I just have gotten into support classes, which is so much fun. Playing a bunch of Brightwing, which has such a unique, interesting skill set. It's ostensibly a healer class, but it does all kinds of really fun things, like you can polymorph bad guys and it turns them into a random critter. Like a little squirrel or a little crab or, you know, whatever, which is extremely satisfying and fun. And instead of a mount, like in this game, characters have mounts to get around faster, which speeds up gameplay quite a bit, which is great. But instead of a mount, Brightwing can teleport to any other character on the map. So you can just like, you know, you're the cavalry coming in to save the day to pop in some heals at the last minute or, you know, it's really great. And I'm playing a lot with Alex Albrecht, and he's just gotten into Abathur, which is a character from StarCraft who is a Zerg that can at times replicate another hero on the map. So you can have two of one hero for a short period of time, which is really cool. But even better than that, he can inhabit another player or another creature on the map or even a tower and be inside it like you would in an Alien movie. And so he can't control the movement of that character because I'm controlling that character, for example. And so he's going wherever I go, but he adds bonuses to me. He can shield me. He can do attacks while he's inside me. So we're doing this amazing chicken fight where I'm controlling the character and he's, you know, for all intents and purposes on my shoulders, going, oh, go left. We almost got that guy. And I, you know, zapping people and making me stronger. It's so fun and so rewarding, and I'm such a fan of this game. I can't wait till it comes out and everybody can play it. And I can't wait for the new heroes that they just announced at Gamescom. There's three new heroes that are so cool.
Do you think it'll be better or worse when everyone can play it? Sometimes I find I enjoy games before everyone can play them because I'm kind of good at them when they're still betas or alphas, and then like the world gets in and I'm just like, oh, I am not good at this game.
Well, there's going to be some of that. I find myself improving all the time, but then there'll be bad games where we just get routed. But, you know, one hopes that the matchmaking system will be good enough to create that. But the great thing about this game is that when I lose and I get frustrated, I'm still having fun. It's like Hearthstone that way. I can pop into another game. The games aren't that long. It isn't a protracted, excruciating loss that I have to endure. Yeah, we can get face rolled, and it sucks if the team I'm on is playing poorly and I'm trying to do certain things and people aren't cooperating. Yeah, that can be frustrating, but for the most part, I'm not deterred from jumping back in because the games are quick and it can be 180 degrees next turn, you know, next round, next game. So I love it. The other game that I've been playing this week is a game you guys have heard me mention during Tabletop Time, which is this game that was the hit of Origins, the Origins convention, called Star Realms. And I've been trying to buy it. It's a very inexpensive deck-building card game. Unfortunately, it's been out of stock everywhere, and so people are just ridiculously jacking up the price. It's like $80 online at one point when I was looking, and it's like under $10 card game. But there's an iOS version that just came out, which is free. It has some in-app purchases, but it's a very, very, very good iOS version of this card game. So it's a deck building game like Dominion, if you're familiar with Dominion, where you're not building a deck like you would in Magic before you play. You're building the deck during play. So there's certain cards that are available that you during the game that you spend other cards to purchase and bring into your hand. But whereas Dominion and a lot of these deck building games, deck building has become almost a genre at this point because there's so many of them, even though the mechanic was only introduced a few years ago. Many of these games play like little solo games that you're playing with other people, but you're creating your deck, you're creating your little world, you're buying things. And really the only interaction you have with other people is when you're trying to buy something that they want or vice versa, or at the end of the game when you're comparing your scores. Star Realms is very much a interactive multiplayer game in the sense that you're constantly attacking people. They can, it's all, as the name suggests, it's all sci-fi settings. So you're building ships and space stations, and you are using the attack power on certain ships to blow up your enemy's base. So every turn you have the potential of attacking them, or buying things and building up other different kinds of attacks. It plays very fast. It's very simple. And the tutorial in the iOS version is excellent. It conveys the rules of the game very elegantly, very quickly, and it gets you into a game fast. I'm very impressed with this iOS version. I'm impressed with the game as well. I hadn't gotten a chance to play it on the table. So this was my first exposure to the game, and I'm intending to purchase it because it lives up to the hype. It's fun, it's fast, and it'll be inexpensive as a card game as well. It's only a two-player game, I should mention that, which is very different from most deck-building games. So it is a head-to-head two-player game, but really cool. Star Realms is what it's called on iOS.
Man, if that's not a transition into the next part of the show, I don't know what is.
Bum, bum, and that bum. Next part of the show is Tabletop Time. Right now. I'm so excited to have Alex here because you are a tabletop gamer. Are you not?
I am. I do some tabletop gaming.
Awesome. Go ahead.
Well, I've been there's been two things that have been obsessing me lately. One, I've been playing Dungeons and Dragons 4th Edition with the same group for like 5 or 6 years now. Wow. And we just played on Friday night again. And like, I've been playing D&D since I was 11 years old. It was the first thing that ostracized me from the women in my community.
The last, but the first.
No. There's been a big parade since then. So we were playing 4th Edition again the other night. And I just, you know, all the people I play Dungeons and Dragons with are improvisers. You know, they're all comedians.
Awesome.
So playing, you know, but everyone also takes the game seriously. Like, everyone respects the game and the rules of the game. And if a character dies, they're dead. And so there's stakes, you know, like all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But so it's really fun to play because we'll go through and do a battle or something. And, you know, it'll take like an hour and a half, whatever, depends on the battle. And the battle will be full of bits. And, you know, and then when that ends, it'll just be these characters sitting around doing bits, figuring out what to do next. So it's just like, it's gone from something I really enjoyed when I was a kid, which was like all the character building and like getting new powers and kicking ass and taking names and all that sort of stuff. And now it's kind of morphed into this like interactive comedy show that I'm a part of that goes on for like 7 hours at a clip while everyone's like, you know, drinking beer and getting high. So it's pretty awesome. Fun.
Yeah, that's very similar to how we play as well. I'm literally ending a 9-week-long D&D 4th edition campaign tomorrow night. I'm DMing a group of guys that are all, it's the TRS guys and a few others that that are all very funny. And it's the same kind of thing that I laugh till tears come out of my eyes sometimes with stuff. And I like, you know, I do voices and weird things as the DM to you know, start the wacky train going. Talk to me a little bit about 4th edition. I mean, if you've been playing D&D this long, are you excited to move away from that to 5th edition? Are you going to stick with it? What is it you like about 4th
edition? I think I'll stick with 4th edition for a little while for the sole reason that my character is, I think, like one level away from finally getting to choose a paragon path. And the thought of like bailing before finally getting to that milestone is like just too much.
What class are you playing?
But, you know, for me, like, I never played 3rd edition. That was, like, in the dark ages, like, during college and right after I moved out to L.A. when I had stopped playing for a couple of years.
When
so
you
I can
did
really
find
only
girls.
Compare 4th edition to 2nd edition. And for me, the big change between 4th edition and 2nd edition was just less looking stuff up. Like, there were just so many tables in 2nd edition. Mm-hmm. And I actually, someone bought me a 2nd edition PH as a birthday gift not too long ago. And so I was going through it and it was like, oh, yeah, like, I don't, you know, like initiative in 2nd edition, for instance, you have to roll new initiative every turn. And then everybody has an initiative modifier on their weapons. So you're constantly having to figure out like the new order of, you know, it's just like, it's all this extra homework.
Yeah.
So I like that 4th edition smooth that out. What I don't like about 4th edition is that all the classes feel very similar. You know, like it's, there's different flavor text on all the powers and stuff. You know, like my, my character right now, the architect, is a human scion.
Nice.
You know, but like, and so he moves people around and like the effects of his powers are slightly different, but it doesn't, you know, I level up the same speed as everyone else. You know, fundamentally my turns function the same as everybody else. And my memory of second edition is that like playing a fighter was fundamentally different from playing a wizard, you know, it was fundamentally different from playing a thief. And from what I've seen of fifth edition so far, they seem to be trying to bring a lot of that back in a way that is simple and accessible and streamlined. And so and for that reason, I do want to check out fifth edition. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, you're definitely correct in that assumption. It is definitely a throwback to that more differentiated experience. I agree with you. I like the fact that in fourth edition, everything's out in front of me. I have a list of all the things I can do, and I pick the one I want to do. I like that. It's clear. It's easy. It's got all the stats right there. As you say, you don't have to cross-reference 12 different things to do one action. But
I mean,
you know,
yeah, I used to, when we played second edition all the time, I was a useful person to have in a party, not because my characters were great or anything, but because I have OCD and a visual memory. And so someone would go like, we need this table, Berg, where is it? I'd go like page 92 of the first PH. I'll find it. You know? Like I knew it all, but like, I don't have to do that anymore. Now it's just like, yeah, I don't know. I have everything right here. I just roll a D20 and play.
Yeah. Well, let's see if maybe you can help. We have an email sent in to our email address, which is dlcfeedback@gmail.com. And we got an email from Shola A, sent us an email saying, I'm married 30-something adult writer trying to get into tabletop gaming, specifically role-playing games like D&D. He tried that once about 10 years ago and it's fantastic, but he's in Los Angeles and none of his circle would be interested. How would you go about finding groups to play with? He likes the show, et cetera, et cetera. So let's see if we can help Shola.
Go back up over that last part again. Say it real slow. How much does he like the show?
He says he thanks for the hard work that you and Spicer put in the show.
Mm-hmm.
It is appreciated.
Yeah, so you're welcome.
That's nice.
Yeah, but Jeff, can you read that back like you're a sultry Spanish temptress?
Thanks for the hard work you put into the show. You are so sassy.
Okay, that was so probably sorry, offensive
on
that.
Several levels. That was offensive on a number of levels. This is a question that comes up a lot. And I think in the age of the internet, I think that your solution is there. There are groups all over the place. When I was getting into board gaming, I went and signed up for a Yahoo group that met in an area that was nearby where I lived. And I just showed up there. And it turned out to be a bunch of really nice people, and I played with them over and over, weeks and weeks. Do you guys have any other suggestions?
Yeah, I mean, I think in LA specifically, we're fortunate to live in a town with a lot of great comic and tabletop game shops. So I don't know where. I mean, it's hard for me to say go to Meltdown when they're doing a game, because you might live in Santa Monica and then don't, because that will be a nightmare for you. But depending on where you live, what part of LA or wherever you live, look to see what stores in your area have some. And then if you're able to and have the means, I think connecting with other gamers at PAX and stuff like that is super helpful, because you can find, it's weird to think that you go to Seattle to find other people from Los Angeles to play with. But I think that's often the case when you're at a large convention with like-minded or like-interested people, you're then able to create a, you know, your own thing that you can take home with you. And then after that, this might sound silly, but believe it or not, your friends might be interested. Like, try, you know, I don't know, make it cool, make it fun, invite them over. It involves you doing the legwork to create the game and to get people to buy in. But I think if you're excited about something, oftentimes you can get your friends excited about it also, at least to give it a shot once. I mean, I know that's the only reason I play games with Jeff is because he's like, tricks me. He's like, this one you're going to like. And I'm like,
I do. Hey, Christian, I got some mail of yours sent to my house for some reason. You should come over and pick it up.
Okay.
It's right over there on the table. It's just going to sit down at the table.
Every other Wednesday day, we'll do some fifth edition. Is that too infrequent if it's only every other week?
No, man, let's do it.
Okay, well,
are we literally making plans right now on the air in front of people?
I had to go pick up your mail, so I mean my mail.
Yeah.
Did you have anything to add to that?
How did you guys meet, Berg? Is it through UCB?
For me, it was, you know, it was all people I already knew through UCB, and just I had played, and we were, me and two of the guys that I performed with were writing a script that was like set in a fantasy realm. And it was about like D&D players. And I was like, you guys should really play so you know what this is like, so you know how it feels. And so I just went out and
be able to write a script to get friends into D&D ploy.
Yeah. But so yeah, at that point I went out and I bought a PH and a Monstrous Manual and a DMG. And then literally read them cover to cover, and just went through the rules and like set up a intro campaign that I DM'd that was like just a dungeon crawl. We went through a spider forest, killed a bunch of Ettercaps. It was a real fun night. There was a bear involved at one point, you know, but I think it's one of those things where if you haven't played D&D, it sounds like it's going to be the hardest thing to do. It sounds like it's just this insurmountable thing. And so I think for a lot of people, there's this imaginary barrier to entry before they get into it. But once someone sits you down and says like, no, every time I come to you, you have three things you can do. You can play one of these cards that's like a power card. You can move your guy up to six spaces. And then you can do something small like take a potion or call someone a butthead. You know, like if you have someone who's willing to like hold your hand through it, it's actually pretty easy to get into. And if you really want to start a group, just be willing to be that guy who's going to hold people's hands and get them enthused about it.
I want to use a minor action to call someone a butthead.
Yeah.
Is that cool?
Okay, that's going to be an athletics check because you're pretty far away. So you
have to really shout.
You're really. And then we could go diplomacy or intimidate, but as the DM, I feel like that's got to be an athletics check for your character.
You have also played a game that I've been dying to play. My friends have it, and we haven't gotten it to the table yet. It is the X-Wing miniatures game.
Oh my God, it's so great.
Is it?
Oh, I want it. So I've actually only played it a handful of times, but I love it. And basically what it is it's a tabletop miniature game that's just a space battle between the Rebel and the Empire, the Rebel forces and the Empire. And you get these miniatures, like, you know, a couple little TIE fighters, you know, a couple X-Wings, you know, that sort of thing. And maybe you get a couple cards that tell you like who's piloting each one of your planes. And then it's literally just, it feels like, you know how when you watch old movies of people planning aerial battles for like World War One, and they have all the little things and the, you know, or the ships they move around.
They've got the stick that they push them with.
Yeah, exactly. It's just that, but with Star Wars. So and it's so easy to pick up. You know, I get intimidated by a lot of board games that have like really thick rule books, or, you know, where like the first time you play the game, it takes like 6 hours because you have to explain each little thing. That turns me off to even getting into a game. But the Star Wars miniatures game is so easy to pick up and so intuitive. And it's literally just like, yeah, you go this far and then you hope you're in range of the guy. And, you know, you sort of get like an intuitive feel for it after a game or two. And it goes pretty quickly too. I think like each individual game I've played has only been like, you know, a 45-minute or an hour long game tops. And when you win and outmaneuver somebody and like come up behind them or something, it is the most satisfying. It is just like you feel so good about yourself, you know.
And those miniatures are so detailed and so awesome looking.
Oh,
and they
God,
keep announcing
great.
New ones. It's just it's crack.
Because they
it.
Just announced that they're doing all the bounty hunter miniatures, right? Like Beyond Boba Fett. I think they're doing all the Scoundrels and Villainy, I think they're calling the expansion.
Yeah, they just announced a bunch of them at Gen Con, and it's awesome. And they're all like proportionally correct. So if you get a, you know, Corellian cruiser, it's the right proportion to the X-Wing. It's just awesome.
Oh yeah. I haven't seen it, but I have a buddy who has the Millennium Falcon, and he was saying you put that on the board and it's just so much bigger than everything else.
It's awesome.
Someone was telling me that, the same company that makes that game is basically like doing a reskin of it to be dragons. And so in theory,
it's exactly right.
Yeah, there will be a dragon version of that game, which,
and they're compatible.
As much as I love Star Wars, yeah. Oh, they're compatible?
Yes, you can play there. You can intermingle. You can have some TIE fighters and a few dragons if you want.
That's the best thing I've ever heard, my entire life.
It validates all my fanfic I've been writing.
Yeah, all this for years I've been writing, you know, like Darth Vader riding a dragon fanfic, and now I can finally see it happen.
Yeah.
Darth Vader on a dragon would be the worst thing you could possibly come across. He's like, well, I'm screwed. There's no getting out of this.
And then Luke befriended the dragon using the power of the Force and love. Yeah, that's sort of how it ends. All the stories end. Okay, I want to talk a bit about the beginning of something that you're going to hear me talk about a lot on this show over the next weeks and months. And that is something I've been meaning to do for literally years now. I have owned Risk Legacy, which is a revolutionary game that was created a few years ago and has now become the next big thing in board games. There's going to be a bunch of new Legacy titles coming out in the next few years from the same designer. They're doing a Legacy version of Pandemic. He's got a new game called Seafall, which is going to take this idea. But basically, the idea is that your game will physically evolve over time as you play it. It's a game that's meant to be played at least 15 times, and each of those games of Risk is impactful on all of the games that follow it in ways that I'm not entirely comfortable with as somebody who cherishes my game collection and keeps things pristine and sleeves my cards and is very fastidious about packaging things up. Risk Legacy is meant to... You take a big ink pen and you write your name on the board. You win a game, you get to name a city. So you take a sticker out of the thing, you peel that sticker off, you smack it onto the board, you write the name of the city you decided it was going to be on the board. There's parts that ask you to tear up certain cards. There are secret packets that only get opened if certain conditions happen, so you don't know what's inside them. But there's literally spots in the rules that say one rule, but have little brackets around them that say, you're going to be putting a sticker over this rule that will have new text that will literally change a rule later on in the game. So we only played the first two games of an at least 15-game-long campaign. But already I am hooked. We haven't opened any of the little secret packets yet, which is one of the big draws of this Legacy concept. But just the mere fact of making decisions that are permanent, the first thing you do when you open this game is you decide what faction you're going to be, and then you decide between one of two bonuses that faction gets. You take a sticker off of one of those two decisions, you stick it right on that faction. It's going to be that forever. And you take the other sticker that you did not choose and you tear it in half. And I had a hard time like destroying things and breaking stuff and physically writing on the board. And if you win a game, you write your name on the board. And I've had this game since it came out, because I was so excited about it because I'd heard such good things. And I hadn't been able to find a group of people that I knew would be committed to 15 games of this. I was so nervous about starting it and not having the same group of guys, but I think we got a good group. We're all into it. And it's the kind of thing where the first game, this guy won, and then he was target number one for game number two. And so even though he had some bonuses because you get rewards for winning the first game that carry over into the second game, I actually won the second game, and he finished distant last because everybody ganged up on him. And that's the kind of thing where there are these histories that you're writing. There is this narrative flow of this massive war that's happening. And yes, it's still Risk. It's still the game of Risk that everybody knows, with some interesting tweaks to the rules. But it's still take over a territory, roll dice, a lot of luck involved in who's going to win. But it is – the stakes are so much – more amped up because you're playing for keeps, quite literally. You're playing for, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to get a bonus that I'm going to have next round? Am I going to be able to name a city? Am I going to be able to scar the board in some interesting way? It's phenomenal and an absolutely revolutionary concept that is actually going to be a thing now. So I'll report back more on how this goes over the coming months as we continue our journey, but could not recommend this higher. This is one of the greatest board game experiences you will ever have, and I'm only two games in.
I look forward to episode 7 of Jeff. Okay, I rip a card. I ripped it. I ripped it. And okay, well, here's what I did. I got to be honest. I got to back all the way up. I went to Kinko's and I made copies of all of the cards. But I ripped my first reproduction.
Yeah, I'm. That may happen.
I've got a group of friends who play Risk Legacy, and the stories of them playing stress me out so much that I don't think I could. Like, there's all these stories of them going like, yeah, so we're playing this game and, you know, like so-and-so was way ahead and then we met this condition and we opened up an envelope and basically we had to shoot him in the temple. It's always this kind of like really epic, like turn of like just change of fortune that happens on a dime in the middle of the game. And then the ripples of that go for weeks afterwards. So everybody gets angry about it and then stays angry about it, which is for a board game to cause that kind of like long-term emotional involvement. Really, that's like that approximates what it is to play like Dungeons and Dragons or something like that. Yeah. You know, like it's just it's very much the same thing.
I just awesome. Like thinking that these games are all long plays to overthrow the government. And it's like, okay, we have 4,000 copies in circulation. Everyone's going to get to the, and the last envelope finally is just like March on Washington, IRL. And you're like, well,
yeah,
it's all
we got to do. We've agreed with the rules up till now.
Well, the craziest thing is so there's these packets and they've got conditions on them that, you know, if you trigger it, you open what's in the pack. But if you pull out the insert in the board, on the bottom part of the box, there is one packet that says, do not ever open this. And the coolest thing about that is that there are multiple different cards. There's not one card that's in every Risk Legacy package that's in that envelope. You don't know what's in there. And I think that is one of the most brilliant things. Rob Davio is the designer of this concept. And he's now bringing it to Pandemic, as I said, and bringing it to his own unique original game called Seafall, which I could not be more excited for. He keeps talking about how difficult a process this is, because quite literally you're creating a series of paths that keep diverging. So to play test this game must be a Herculean effort, because you have, you know, if this happens, then that happens, but it didn't have to happen. It could happen over here or at this time or that time. So you have to, you know, it's one thing to be able to do that with a game like Risk that has an established rule set that's been proven over decades as working. It's another thing altogether to create a brand new game whose rules are original to be able to sustain that kind of diverging, branching pathway structure. And so I'm super excited for that. But it's this thing of like, do we open the thing that says never open me, or do we not? When do we do that? It's such a tantalizing concept, and it's something that can only happen on the tabletop, and it makes it so much more real and visceral and present and exciting. And I highly recommend it. It's been too long. It took me too long to get to this point.
So have you not opened the card?
Not yet.
Is that the ultimate collectible?
The do not open thing? Do not open this ever.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Because your curiosity is, you know, what is in there? What's it going to do? But, you know, do you follow the rules and say don't ever open it? Or do you, you know, do you do it?
And if you open that, it's going to be like Nedry's computer from Jurassic Park, where just like every device in your home starts going like, you didn't say the magic word.
Or it's just like, Jeff, your wife cheated on you. And you're like, what? And there's like a picture.
How
and you're like,
you know that?
And you're like, how did this happen?
You've known for years.
Awesome.
That's crazy.
Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Stick around at the very end. We're going to do a new thing called the parting gift, which I'm kind of foisting on you guys at the last minute. I didn't really prompt you for that, but it'll be one last thing we recommend. It doesn't have to be a video game. So stick around for that. But in the meantime, Alex, thank you so much for hanging out with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it was awesome. You were great. And I would love the people to know where they can see more of your stuff if they're interested.
I'd say if you want to see what I am actually like, go to my Twitter feed, which is just Twitter/actuallyberg. If you want to see what it looks like when a group of improvisers and comedy writers spends their free time making a fake Facebook account for somebody, posing as a real Facebook account, and does that for 5 years or more,
wow,
go to Facebook.com. Twitter.com/Berg420, and you'll get to see what it looks like when you're roasted permanently on the internet.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Christian, what's going on with you this week?
It just dropped today. I don't think the Nerdist post is out, but the new episode of What's New on the Nerdist Network, my stand-up comedy podcast, is out, and it's fun. It's Jan Karam, Brady Matthews, Hasan Minhaj, and I. And then in the discussion, we never talked about it before, which is weird. We've done enough of these episodes, but we got into mic technique in a really silly way. And then also, whether or not late show TV segments, stand-up sets should be live to tape, or if not, if stand-up should be allowed to do another take. Like, for instance, if the first one doesn't go well, it's kind of a debate going around TV stand-up right now. And it's interesting. So that is out. It's What's New with Christian Spicer, and it's on iTunes, wherever you can find it, at Nerdist.com. Mr. Cannata, what do you have popping?
Well, brand new episode of We Have Concerns this morning, and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. If you want to check that out, it's a comedy show that I do. People are digging it. Last week we were at number 8 on the iTunes comedy charts. You can check that out at wehaveconcerns.com. If you like movies, check out the Slash Filmcast, although I'm not on this week because I was not able to go see Sin City. But Devendra and Dave... Thing. Yeah, probably a good thing. Devendra, Dave carried on without me. But check that out over at slashfilm.com. And that's what I've got going. Let's give the people a little something. Christian, you got a little parting gift for the listeners?
I do. So this is going back to stand up, and if you're out there and you're interested in it. Eddie Pepitone, who is an amazing stand-up comedian. I might have plugged this when it just came out before, but he's great. You've seen him in Old School with some great parts. He's an amazing stand-up, and his new special is on Netflix. So if you're a Netflix subscriber, obviously it's free to watch, and it's called In Ruins. And Eddie is so fantastically funny, and I feel like too many people haven't witnessed his genius yet. He's amazing and been amazing for years, but go watch it. Eddie Pepitone, In Ruins on Netflix. It'll not disappoint. And what are we calling this? Parting shot? That's my parting shot.
I was saying parting gift, but, you know, parting shots.
That's my parting gift. That's my parting gift.
A little less aggressive, a little more. Alex, you got one?
Can I recommend a book?
Of course. I love books.
Okay. So I don't know if you guys have heard about this reading thing, but I've been getting into it lately.
Oh, man. Big fan.
Big fan. First time reader, long time looker. But so I recently read Ready Player One, which by Ernest Klein, which has been floating around for a while. It's not a particularly new book, but it's great. It's so good. And if you like video games, it is just such a fun read. It's basically Charlie and the Chocolate Factory in virtual reality. Like, that's all it is. And it's as fun as that premise sounds. It gets going within like 5 pages and just keeps going until it finishes. And I read it, I think, in like 3 days. It's fantastic.
Probably why you're so excited about all that VR news as well. There's nothing that gets somebody more jazzed about the future of VR than Ready Player One does.
I think that's a very astute point.
I would also, let me just piggyback that and say, if you dig Ready Player One, and if you've already read it, read it for sure. But if you've already read it, I would also recommend Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore, which for me is the perfect... Not a sequel, but a next reading choice. It does a lot of the same kinds of things, but in a very different way, and is very well written, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. But I want to use my parting gift to recommend The Legend of Korra, because book 3 just finished up this week. I'm not caught up all the way, but I'm sure enjoying catching up. And if you somehow missed Avatar The Last Airbender, not the film, the film was terrible, but the Nickelodeon television show, which is one of the greatest fiction fantasy stories ever told. I it is not any less than that. It's shoulder to shoulder with Star Wars, with The Hobbit, with any kind of story you want to put up against it. It is that good. Its sequel is The Legend of Korra, and that show is phenomenal as well, breaking some really interesting new ground in that universe. And
could not recommend it higher. All right, dudes, that's going to do it for this DLC. We will see you next week on Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.